Welcome to Highly Questionable. We have one extraordinary writer and journalist with us in Mina Kimes, and we also have Pablo Torre. Let's get his thoughts on what he likes about today's show. What do you like today, Pablo?
I like the fact that two Asian people are on television at the same time, Dan. And also,
that's
whatever
right.
You are.
That's,
yeah.
That's right.
Pablo, let's do the Dragon Ball Z thing.
Oh, come on. Already you guys are starting?
Are we too far away to do this?
This way.
All right, let's get started.
Did last night's win make you think more or less of the Eagles?
Okay, before we get to the Eagles, can I just make this point again about the Patriots that have had 17 straight 10-win seasons? The Patriots, who have been in the AFC Championship game every year since 2010, how do they stay up there while Super Bowl champions like this team, like Jacksonville in the AFC Championship game, like Atlanta, the way they fall apart? Philadelphia is so injured all over the field that wheezing to a victory against the Giants makes me feel no more secure about them doing anything in the playoffs. Any team that emerges from this division is going to get throttled by the top half of that NFC, which is better than these teams by miles.
Well, to answer your question, Dan, about how the Patriots get there year after year, apparently by filming the Bengals. We'll get to that later. As far as the Eagles, I didn't change their mind about them. I did change my mind a little bit about Carson Wentz. I don't think he's blameless for their struggles this season, but last night really highlighted his lack of options. I mean, the Eagles, for some reason, came into this game with three wide receivers, and after losing Alshon Jeffrey to injury, 40-year-old Josh McCown was their backup. I mean, Wentz's biggest producer in this game was a 5'7" running back named Boston Scott. Boston Scott is not an NFL player. It's a nickname you give to your college roommate when there are two guys named Scott and you don't want to learn their last names. Like, whose Xbox is this? It's Boston Scott's. That makes more sense.
By the way, there is no bigger gap, I think, in what you might imagine a Boston Scott might look
that's
like
true.
Between Boston
that's
Scott true. And then actually looking and finding out, oh, that's Boston Scott?
That's
and why did they only start using him in the second half? Why is Greg Ward not only their best receiver, but also their only one by overtime? All of these questions make me think about the Eagles. I don't know if I think any more highly of them, though. I'm just confused as to how did they get here? And how are they still atop this division technically?
Boston Scott thinks Matt Damon is robbed of an Oscar every year.
Boston Scott is the guy who pushed me in the back that time I went into Boston during college. I never forgot that guy.
That one time,
and then I never left again.
Boston Scott is about to be so angry at us in approximately two questions.
Oh, Mina, why did you do this? Yes, Boston Scott is going to annihilate us with a whole lot of misspelled words.
Did Eli show he's not finished?
Okay, this is the lowest possible bar that we can have for a two-time Super Bowl champion. Don't threaten me with that finger point that we have to talk about whether Eli Manning has anything left in the tank. What's left in the tank is totally on red. There's very little there, just a handful of checkdowns. You saw 30 yards in the second half when they needed to win the game. They were totally incompetent. I'm of the belief that many quarterbacks in this league, almost all of them, you put them in, they're going to go 20 for 27. They're going to have very few incompletions. They're going to give you the occasional game like Kyle Allen gives us. This was nothing. Last night in the first half, he surprised us, but the second half revealed that that's not going to take you anywhere for a team that's lost nine straight now.
It is really hard to tell what Eli Manning is right now because this game did remind me of the NFL equivalent of The Irishman. It was like 3.5 hours long. I fell asleep several times. And the oldest guy alternated between like startlingly young and also very depressingly old. And it was mostly the latter, I think. But in all of this, ultimately, can Eli Manning still be like the third best quarterback in the NFC East? After everything I saw last night, yes, he absolutely can.
So I haven't seen The Irishman. It looks very long. But based solely on the billboards, it appears to be about some old guys getting together for one last job. I'm definitely right. And that's what would happen if we let Eli Manning go mano a mano with Ryan Fitzpatrick next week. It is the matchup America needs. It's also the matchup Eli Manning needs to get back to 500. Water has to find its level. Beyond that, honestly, what else should the Giants do? It's not like he was that much worse than Daniel Jones, and they're not playing for anything other than a shot at Chase Young at this point.
By the way, Boston Scott thinks the Irishman should have had a lot more Irish in it.
Oh, yes.
It's very misleading.
Much, many, many more viewers than the 30 million it got.
Are you buying the Patriots' explanation for filming the Bengals?
Look at where this is in the show. This does not have echoing staying power, even though the Patriots have told you basically, yes, we broke the rules. And I think they've deflated some of this story. I didn't do that on purpose. That was an accident.
You sure?
Using deflated in a verb. I am. I didn't mean to do that. But I think they've deflated some of this because it's much more fun to sniff around and wonder, what were they doing? Were they doing something wrong? The most cheatingest champion that we've had across sports gets caught again. And this is not about the crime. This is about the criminal. Any other team in the sport does this, they don't get any coverage at all. It's a footnote in your local newspaper.
It's a little bit about the crime because the crime is hilarious. The fact that it's the Cincinnati Bengals, Dan, is hilarious. And by the way, it doesn't rule out any foul play because you may remember Spygate 1, the first installment in the Patriots cheating trilogy, involved the 4-12 New York Jets. The Patriots didn't get to be the Patriots by only looking for an edge against good teams. They will do whatever it takes. They are the coupon clippers of the NFL. Now, is it likely that they set up a long con involving a sham production to get access to some useless video as foretold by Seth Wickersham and Don Van Natta? Probably not, but I do find it plausible that some employee was so steeped in this culture of always looking for an edge that he made a dumb mistake.
On the one hand, we would have all expected the Patriots scout to approach scouting the Bengals by doing the Homer Simpson thing of wearing glasses with just eyeballs painted on and falling asleep. That would have been appropriate. But the issue with this conspiracy theory is that it's plausible. And it's plausible because I don't know what kind of journalists you guys are, but I went and found the episodes of Do Your Job, the workplace docuseries the Patriots made, and I watched them. I watched two episodes. They're both 10 minutes long. And they look like what you would do if you were trying to make a sham docuseries to protect the very long-range ploy that Mina is describing. There are a lot of useless sound montages. There are montages of guys getting their feet taped. There's an SNL-style intro for all of the trainers in one episode. It smells, and I have further follow-up questions about why that was made in the first place.
Did you really just cite as your journalist credentials, I watched two 10-minute videos of Do Your Job? Is that what you're just, you went to Harvard, you wrote a couple of pieces, long form for a magazine. Did you really just say, I watched a couple of videos, I did journalism, I'm a better journalist than you two?
10 minutes is like an hour in 2019 units of measurement.
It is. You know what? You're a hardworking journalist.
Thank you.
Should the Ravens sit Lamar against the Jets on Thursday night if his quad isn't 100%?
I always wonder if people watching at home say to themselves, look, is this television show? Are they really pretending to be doctors? These three people who just gasbag sports opinions, they're going to tell us more than the Ravens staff about how healthy or dangerous it is to continue playing this person. They have more information than we do. They don't want us to have any of that information. And that one seed kind of matters because they don't want to be going on the road in the AFC, even though they can go on the road. But I'd like to see RG3 play just so I could see, hey, the things that they do, how much difference is there between Lamar Jackson doing them and RG3 doing them? Because RG3 was Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson. They ran him into the ground and they got him injured. I'd actually like to see RG3 doing the same sort of things that Lamar Jackson does, or trying to do them anyway.
They have to protect Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, with all due respect to Daniel Jones and Eli Manning, he is the only man who is backed up by his Ghost of Christmas Future. RG3 should be starting. RG3 should be the warning that if you do not take this all very seriously, you may lose the guy that we all say has revolutionized the sport and excited us beyond how we thought football could do so. So for me, you be careful because you're playing the Jets. Why do you even need him this week?
So I buck a little bit at the RG3 Lamar comparison because they are very different quarterbacks with very different skill sets and very different athletes. Lamar is much better at running and avoiding hits than RG3 ever was, and the Ravens use him in a different way on the field from how RG3 was used. Now, based on what we have heard out of Baltimore this week, I don't think it's that serious. It sounds like a team just preparing for Thursday night football. And as Dan said, I do think it's very important for Baltimore to secure the number one seed and avoid going to Foxborough in January at all costs.
But Mina, that's the exact reason the Ravens should not play Lamar Jackson. It's that somewhere out there, Boston Scott is hoping that a banged up Lamar Jackson and that quad goes into the New York Jets defense and gets hurt even more.
None of us even mentioned that you're sending him into the teeth of a defense that, while it doesn't look for the Jets all that formidable, they are led by the bounty hunter, the guy who wore a disguise after being scandalously thrown out of the league for trying to injure people on purpose. We cannot have Greg Williams in the same stadium with Lamar Jackson without yanking him out by security.
Coming up next on my son Stevie Shaw.
No, but right here. Right here. This is where the celebration is better because she finds the camera.
Time to play the game that thinks that Dan is the old man on the show now. Do you question?
Wow. Thinks I am the old man on the show.
Knows.
There's no disputing that. You give us topics and events, we question them. And I'm less good than the other old man that was here recently.
That was just a direct insult. There wasn't even like
joke. No, there's not a joke there. That's it. That is the language of intimacy among men. Insults.
Do you question if this is an impressive goal or bad defense?
All right, let's go out to Tottenham and see if Youngman's son, am I pronouncing that right? His nickname is Sonny. Am I pronouncing
close.
That right?
Sort close of. Enough.
Close enough.
Yeah. Close enough.
Let's see what we have here. Impressive goal or not very good defense?
I mean, I've
watched
this
300
times.
He's got the ball now. Oh, come on.
Look at
this is pretty impressive. Come on. Impressive goal or bad defense? What do you mean? He turned on turbo boosters. How many guys did he blow through? So let's see here. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
I mean, this is the bad one. Yeah. That was the bad one.
He is so good.
This is the first time two Asians have been on Highly Questionable, and you played a clip of an Asian athlete. I feel pandered to, yet
that's
also
right.
seen.
But also,
let's not skip over this insulted. That question was flat out HR violation. What are you talking about?
It was culturally biased.
Why would you even ask the question?
Why can't we just celebrate Asians around here? Why can't we just do it?
Stop underestimating us.
I think we can accuse Mina of some Asian bias. All of a sudden, she's all interested in goal scorers when we tried to give her this adorable kid, Cam, scoring 22 goals
really?
In a game.
Cam
all
again.
All she did was complain.
Cam?
All she did,
Cam?
She complained the whole time.
In Mina's defense, though, being disappointed in a child is a very Asian thing to do.
Do you question which was better, the save or the celebration?
Oh, we're going to introduce you to Katie Meyer, the goaltender for Stanford. She has some swag, and she's in a penalty kick situation here, and she makes the save, which is impressive. I'm sorry for no spoiler alert. No, but right here. This is where the celebration is better because she finds the camera.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, the jersey pull.
And then watch this. Whoa. Watch this. Yes,
oh,
she zips
the
lip and throws away the key.
Wow.
I mean, I question the shot. That thing was so meek. I found it relatable. Look at this dribble towards the corner. No, that wasn't a good save. I could have stopped that.
It feels like we're punching down though by pointing that out. That's how bad it was. But this is a professional. This is someone who could do this job because the number one thing you learn is how to find that camera.
I do love, with all of that, she was feeling the emotion, she's got the adrenaline going, but she slowed down the tossing away of the imaginary key so you can enjoy it a little more.
But this is kind of rare. Don't you guys usually show bad goalies on this show?
That's a good point.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Right, yeah.
Hit it. Let's have a montage of terrible goalies.
Yeah.
No celebration for him.
You can't play enough of these. We've got a bunch of them. That's terrible.
Yes. The comunicaciones, a classic clip.
Yeah, like what level of soccer is any of this?
Point is that?
Classic.
There are a lot of people there.
Oh, no.
There are a lot of people there.
That's my favorite.
How about what level of soccer is this?
Oh.
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 Oh, no.
Oh, I kind of like that.
That green guy there.
Oh, no.
Oh,
and there it is. Yes. He made the save.
Yes,
he made the save there.
And then approved the uploading of that video, dooming his child to a prison of viral fame. So congratulations.
I don't know why Tim Legler did that.
Do you question if this worked better than expected?
All right, we've got an ATV situation. Usually when we show you an ATV, we're showing you collide with another thing like mattresses, a truck full of mattresses. What's this ATV do?
A truck full of mattresses.
Whoa!
That is, what?
Whoa! Oh, those are two ladders.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, so we got a track made of two ladders. And I gotta say, this worked better than I would have thought.
Oh.
I mean, granted, this is what I try to do when I play Grand Theft Auto V every time I play the video game, but I have a question. What is the end game, Spence? What happens when you get to the roof? What are you going to do then?
Yeah.
Well, I want you guys to notice here, I know that there are some distractions here, but when we show you this video again, I just want to show you the guy on the left there, a funny hat, and look how much he's helping with his left foot there. He's got his left foot there so that his friend can make it onto the roof, and then he slides out of the picture with his beer, never to be seen again.
You could ask, what is the end game of literally every video we show on this show? Or this show, period, if we're being real.
Yeah.
Time to play the game that thinks Pablo's going to botch the head nod today. See?
Well, okay. Oh, no. Yeah.
You told me left. You told me left.
I think we all botched that. You tell us what's on television. We tell you if we're intrigued or not.
Tonight on HBO, Belichick and Saban, The Art of Coaching.
These guys in press conferences are usually not very good, but sometimes you get Belichick in the right settings and he gives you some of what he gave you on Ed Reed, where he's fanboying, talking to Ed Reed, just amazed by a play that he made. So I'm hoping this is that, but let's see what we've got for a clip.
There's a lot of people that will take the challenge to climb the mountain. But when you get to the top of the mountain, you become the mountain.
But the great ones can say, you know what? I can be even better. Nick was the first coach I hired and the best coach I hired.
We had a lot of suffering, but I knew exactly what you expected from me.
Certainly there was some tough love there.
The most challenging thing to me is to keep the guys motivated.
To this day, I still take some of the drills and techniques that I learned from him that I thought were better than what I was doing.
Let's go to work here.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
I can't stand it. I'll up and run it again, Brady.
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
I hope it's honest and revealing. No matter how much music they put on that, that was not necessarily feeling honest and revealing. Mina, are you intrigued?
Of course, I love these coaches. I do hope that along the way we find out they somehow gathered Dolphins footage just to have it.
How about you, Pablo? Are you intrigued?
I am very intrigued because I want to diagnose the power imbalance inside of that friendship. Like, you saw some shots there. Bill Belichick definitely gets the power chair, right? That is the guy at the top. And this is the Bill Belichick show with Nick Saban. I want to see more of that.
Let's see that. Let's see it at the end there. You could show that clip of Nick Saban at the beginning where he's sitting in that chair and he looks like he's in the shadow of Belichick and unhappy to be there. Yes, there you go. Look at him. Look at him there. Look at him. He's not happy to be there. That body language stinks.
That is the face of a man and the arms of a man who knows exactly how incompetent he was at the sport that the other guy has dominated like nobody else.
I also just think that's how he looks always.
Tonight on History, Kings of Pain.
This is basically just animals biting men, and they scream. And there are no women in this because women aren't idiots about this stuff. So we've seen scorpions. We've seen terrible spiders. What do we have now?
I got that weird feeling again of excitement. And then you realize what you just did. You just signed your own fate.
Tuesday.
Often in nature, the biggest bites come from the smallest things.
Yep.
Oh, I just want to get the gnaw monitor and get out of here.
Hippopotamus is the most dangerous animal on the planet. It will bite you in half if you go in its territory.
Whoa. My hippo just hit the boat. Just go, man.
Kings of Pain.
Yes, the animals have gotten larger. I was resting in the water. I don't know why that boat came out of the dark and bothered me like that. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I am very intrigued. I want to find out, like, did the hippopotamus make that roaring noise, or were they just sort of, like, ginning up the Foley artistry in the background of that clip? Also, why is the hippopotamus qualifying for Kings of Pain? Is that pain? Just an animal that just kills things.
Yeah, that's just fear, and if it bit them, they would die. That would not be pain. It would go beyond pain into death. Mina, are you intrigued?
So, I don't know if I've seen too many Kings of Pain videos on this show, but that was actually, like, a little weak, in my opinion. Like, not painful
enough. Yeah, there was no pain. Yeah, wow. No pain at all. But you've gotten desensitized because this is our reigning king of pain around here, bigger and badder than all of the kings of pain that are sitting there in dark videos.
Ooh, with
him, may or may not.
Oh, no!
No! Yes, that's right. Yes, there it is. Look at him. He is the king of pain.
Oh.
Yes!
Oh.
Whoa, look out. Whoa,
oh,
that
no.
was... Look at his stomach. His stomach looks like it's laughing at him. Look, his whole thing. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for watching. Pablo Torre, you can catch him every day, 4 Eastern on High Noon, and 2 podcasts over here. Pablo doesn't have any. Mina Kimes has the Mina Kimes Show with Lenny and ESPN Daily. Check them both out. You don't have to do anything with Pablo.
Thanks.